Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to America's Best Baseball Podcast. We take you behind the scenes in and around Major League Baseball with former big league manager Kevin Kennedy and veteran baseball broadcaster Rich Herrera. This is the only weekly podcast hosted by someone like Kennedy, who played, coached, and managed in pro ball. So we can take you into the manager's office for a real insider's view of baseball, alongside a veteran baseball broadcaster like Herrera, who has covered the game from coast to coast. So let's talk some baseball with your hosts. Here they are, the skipper Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera.
Welcome, everybody, to America's Best Baseball Podcast. I'm Rich Herrera. That, of course, is the skipper, Kevin Kennedy. Kevin, what's your favorite time of year? Is it this time right now where we're getting ready for that last stretch run through September? Is it spring training? Is it the All-Star break? I mean, there's so many different portions to a baseball season. Everyone seems like my favorite.
Yeah, for me, I've always loved spring training. That's one of them. And then I've always loved the playoffs. There's the final 2 weeks of the season, the stretch run. Those are my two favorite, and they're almost equal in a lot of ways, because in spring training, usually you're gone for 3 months. You haven't seen the guys, and then you start getting revved up around right after the first of the year. And I remember we always, in my day, we used to always go at Valentine's Day. That used to be our reporting date, of spring training. And then,
because you love baseball, so we're going to show up on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, you show up on Valentine's Day, and you know, you see new guys that you maybe have traded for, get guys from the minor leagues that you haven't seen a whole lot of. They get their first chance, things like that. So those first 3 weeks of spring training are one of the most relaxing parts for a manager in the big leagues. And then it starts getting real serious. And then the final 10 days are real tough, because that's when you have to cut guys. And some guys don't have a job maybe forever. Guys have to go back to the minor leagues, et cetera. You have to release certain guys, things like that. But this time of year now, when we get to the sprint of Major League Baseball, as you know, Rich, August 15th is where the marathon becomes a sprint, and we're past that August 15th point now. So, for example, the Dodgers have 31 games to play, and they're two games out of first place is all, because both Arizona and Colorado lost. So the Dodgers were idle, and they're sitting there in Texas trying to win two, and they know they're in a more favorable maybe position as far as schedule goes than the other two teams. So they're actually sitting pretty good, and we'll see how it plays out for teams that haven't been through this before, like the Philadelphia Phillies, some of those young guys that haven't been through a pennant race. Gabe Kapler is first year doing this as a manager. The Braves, of course, some of those guys haven't been through it before. We'll see how it comes out, and that's the fun time.
All right, so you talked about the marathon versus the sprint, which I love to talk about. For those just joining our podcast for the very first time, and by the way, the listenership is going back up on this podcast again, so we thank all of our loyal listeners that have listened to Kevin over the years, whether we were working at Fox together, we were working down at Tampa together, satellite radio, other shows that we've done. I'll just remind everybody that we need you to help spread the word. So if you enjoy the podcast, great. If you love the podcast, even better. But no matter what, tell all your friends about the podcast so we can continue to grow this podcast and make it bigger and better. So, with that being said, Kevin, let's talk about the difference between the marathon and the sprint at the end of the season and the sense of urgency that comes along with that.
Well, I think right now, when you've got what went on, I'll just give you an example, because there's three teams in the National League West, to start with them, that are really going to out, you know, whoever plays the best baseball down a stretch against the other team. For example, Arizona comes into L.A. for four games starting on Thursday, and I get to work three of those, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, with Rick Monday. That could be your season right there. Just like when Boston played New York a few weeks ago, when they swept them and pushed it out to a 10-game lead, everybody thought the American League East was over. But there was enough time, Rich, where if the Boston Red Sox went in a little slump and the Yankees played well, that they could catch up because they had maybe 50 games left. Well, now it's down to 29-30 for most teams. So it's really, really different. So every game becomes magnified, and you use the word urgency. You really have to manage with urgency. And I don't think last night, for example, in the Rocky game, I was really surprised that there wasn't more urgency on the Rockies once they got a lead in that eighth inning. In fact, I thought maybe even Buddy Black, who's an excellent manager, but I thought he might even use Wade Davis because he's been throwing well for a four-out save. Consequently, he did not. And they ended up losing the game, giving up five runs with five walks in the bottom of the eighth inning after they went ahead on a grand slam by LeMahieu. That's a big loss for them because they would have been tied for first. And now it's the D-backs who lost last night. Stratton threw a phenomenal game for the Giants. They couldn't even score against Stratton. And, you know, guys, it's really getting tough right now. And the Dodgers are sitting in Texas, and you expect that the Dodgers, with the sweep of San Diego last weekend, that they should win these two games in Texas. They've got Walker Buehler going today, who's pitching phenomenal ball, throws the ball 98 miles an hour. He's got great secondary stuff. He should put that lineup down, that young lineup. And, of course, Beltre's still there, but that's not enough to carry him. And you would expect the Dodgers to say, hey, we're going to win these two games, and they'll be looking at the scoreboard. So by the time Arizona comes to L.A., there could be a tie for first place. So that game becomes really magnified, this four-game weekend series against the Dodgers, well, the D-backs and the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium. So that's what I'm talking about. And, Rich, just to go back to April, you've got time for guys to get untracked a little bit. You don't panic if you're 10 games under the first 2 months like the Dodgers were, for example. A lot of people were panicking around baseball. Analysts were writing them off nationally. You know that story. And I remember when the Dodgers went into Washington and swept them, I said that I think the Dodgers now, that's their turning point. They're going to come back, and I see them getting into first place and perhaps never looking back.
So I look at the season as that sense of urgency. You can't have your pedal to the metal for all 162 games. And like you said, we get to Memorial Day and you get to Labor Day. There are certain days that you get to in this game, the third, maybe the quarter point of the beginning of the season. And you kind of figure out who you are by the All-Star break. You really should know who you are and what you need. And now at this point, this is where you start hitting that gas pedal if you want to get to the playoffs. And you start punching it as hard as you can because there's a sense of urgency that you can't grind through an entire 162 games. The other part of this I think is interesting is what happens when you're that team that's trying to get to the playoffs. Listen, it'll be electric at Dodger Stadium with the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers slugging it out. But what happens when you play teams that aren't going to slug it out, that aren't going anywhere? They know they're not going anywhere. When you're the Yankees and the Red Sox and you're looking at the scoreboard, you're playing the Baltimore Orioles or you're playing the Kansas City Royals or the Dodgers just playing the San Diego Padres. It's interesting that sometimes you will see those teams, and they don't like the word spoiler doesn't work, does it, Kevin? Nobody wants to be a spoiler, do they?
No, not at all.
It's an overused term, I think.
No, unfortunately, I've never managed a team at any level in my career where we were a spoiler. We had really good minor league years. The 8 years I was with the Dodgers, we finished first place five times and second place three. And in the big leagues, we had two firsts, a second, and a third. So I've never had a team where we've been out of it by, let's say, July. Never had a team in the big leagues, fortunately, knock on wood, that never happened to me. So I don't know what that feeling is like, but I do know it as a player. I've had some teams that I was on that we were out of it, and that's not a fun feeling going to the ballpark every day.
So when I see these clubs that are out of it, I think they've got one good punch left in them. And if they knock you down, they're going to get in that fight, just maybe out of spite because they're not going anywhere and they don't want anybody else to go anywhere. But if you punch them in the face and you knock them down, a lot of times you'll see them crumble and just go, oh, I'm getting ready to go play golf in the offseason. So it's interesting when you see these teams that are on top of the division play the bottom dwellers in the division and see how hard those guys fight in between those matchups with the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, or the Dodgers and the Rockies, or the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Well, let's just take San Diego for an example. I thought they would represent better last weekend against the Dodgers. I didn't think they were, even though they did tie the game against Kenley Jansen.
And we need to talk about that.
In the Kershaw game, I mean, I figured in extra innings the Dodgers were going to pull it out, and they did. But the game where they had a 2-0 lead on Sunday, last Sunday, and the kids pitching well, the lefty, Erlin was pitching.
Robbie Erlin, yeah.
Robbie Erlin was pitching, and he got through the lineup twice. And here he goes third time around the lineup. I thought Andy Green, once he got in trouble with the 2-0 lead, he walks, or he gives up a base hit to Ryu, the pitcher, right? He's got two outs in the fifth inning, 2-0 Padre lead. I thought because the Padres and the Dodgers historically have had a decent rivalry from a standpoint that the Padres love to knock the Dodgers off, I thought that Andy Green would manage with more urgency in the fifth inning, and consequently he didn't. He let Erlin face all the big guys in the Dodger lineup, and Turner ends up hitting a two-run double, and Machado ends up hitting a home run. He did have the bullpen up, but by the time he brought the bullpen in, it was 4-2 Dodgers. They scored four runs with two outs, and they ended up blowing that game wide open. I thought he would manage with more urgency. Instead of saying, I want Erlin to get the win, I thought he would say, you know what, you're not pitching well, you've hit the wall, and I've got to bring, I mean, I think it was five or six straight Dodgers, or seven, actually, even when the bullpen came in, that the Dodgers batted around that inning with two outs in that fifth inning. And I thought they didn't represent as strongly as I thought they would against the Dodgers. So the Dodgers consequently swept them. And, you know, you're looking at that. Colorado's going to go in there soon and then after the Angels and play them. And we'll see what happens. You know, it's they're supposed to go in there and beat them as well. But, you know, every time I look at the Padres play the Arizona or Sandy or Colorado, they seem to win a game or two. So,
well, and that's why I said, because I've been around a lot. Listen, I've broadcast for more losing ball clubs than anybody else I know. Was in Oakland after they traded McGuire, was in San Francisco, was in Tampa Bay for the Devil Rays. I always thought, if I give you a little bit of life, it's kind of like a boxing match. If I give you a little bit of life and I let you hang around long enough, you're going to feel like you can win. But if I push you down, knock you down early, you more than likely you're going to roll over and just fight for another day.
Yeah, and I think what I saw in that series was that even though they did battle back against Kershaw, which is a credit to them, and they made it a 4-3 game, and then Kershaw went eight innings, and then Jansen had the ball with a one-run lead, and Austin Hedges hit a bomb on a high cutter, and they tied it. I just thought the game wasn't as close as what the score indicated. Let's just put it that way. But I just thought some of the guys were playing for themselves, if you know what I mean. I mean, Hosmer is not the same guy at all. He's hitting 250. He looks like he's trying to hit a home run every swing. They're not looking like they're trying to drive the run in or execute. I mean, Hunter Renfro hits a line drive, and Will Myers, it would have been a base hit to tie the game, I think, on the another game the day before the Kershaw game, and that would have tied the game. Or no, that was the same game, excuse me. And they might have won that game with the Hedges home run. They might have won 5-4, but the base hit that Renfro got, it would have been a clean base hit because the shortstop was way over in the hole, and Will Myers tries to beat the ball. I mean, you got to let the ball go by and then run. He would have scored anyway as far as that ball was hit. It might have went all the way to the wall in left center field at Dodger Stadium. Things like that. And Andy Green did address that. He said, we got to clean some things up. Well, those are the types of things why you're 30 games under 500 year after year after year. When is it going to be cleaned up? I've heard every manager that's managed there say, well, we're going to clean these things up. They're young guys. They're not young anymore.
How does that happen?
Will Myers is not young, and Hosmer's not young, and Renfro's not young anymore. They've been prospects forever. Couple of those guys, you know, and it's time that they play at a better level than what they're playing.
Well, what happens there? Because I hear that all the time from managers, especially from losing ball clubs. Got to clean that up. Got to clean that up. How did it get to be that point in the first place?
Rich, I don't know. It's really hard for me because fortunately I was with a winning organization as a minor league manager and never had saw that type of play. Time after time, especially this late into the season. I don't know if guys aren't paying attention or if guys are thinking about their own numbers because they're so far down in the standings that they're looking for their own numbers. I don't really know. It's hard for me to answer that because I always demanded execution type baseball, situational baseball. I would not, even in Texas when we had a tough time in 93 there, we were 10 games under at one point. I had the big league guys work out on an off day in June, and technically by MLB standards,
you were breaking rules.
And the CBA, yeah, you can't at that time you couldn't play more than 20 games in a row, and so basically I told the guys on the plane as we landed, we had a 2-8 road trip, and I said, hey, we're going to work out tomorrow. It's optional, but I expect everybody to be there. I know you guys by rules don't have to be there, but we'll see who wants to win and who wants to just pad their own numbers.
So did everybody show up?
Everybody showed up, and from that point on, I remember the date. It was June 25th of that year, 1993. We went from 10 under to 20 games over at that point in time, and we finished in second place in what was then the old American League West, which had six teams. So that was a turning point, and we went 20 games over from that point on, and we did situational games in mid-season, and I had Claude Osteen pitched to one team. I split the guys up into two teams, and I had Mickey Hatcher pitch to another, and we played situational games. And all my home run hitters, I made them use the field and go the other way. But what I see with teams like the Padres and teams that don't win, I just see guys trying to go deep. I mean, I don't see, in a lot of
strikeouts. Nobody's embarrassed to strike out anymore.
No, not at all. And when I look at the Dodgers and guys like Justin Turner, I see maybe the best two-strike hitter in the National League. I mean, he fouls balls off, and then boom, you try to go in on him. You don't get the ball in. He turns on it. It's a two-run double to tie it. Later in the game, they try to go in on him. They try to go in. He fouls some balls off. They throw him a cookie down the middle. And he hits it right back up the middle, rolls a base hit to center field. That's why the Dodgers are winning right now and playing much better. Two-strike approach has been better. Bellinger's had a better two-strike approach. A lot of the guys I've had, Peterson's had a better two-strike approach, and it's been contagious, and it's led by Justin Turner. So that's what you need to do if you're a team like San Diego or Kansas City right now, or some of these teams that are going to lose 100 games. You still have to approach the game. The process has to be the right process.
See, that's what it is, because I think we get caught up in two things that I think are bad for a team. Number one, everybody's so caught up in numbers that the numbers will set you on a different path that doesn't help you win. I love the numbers as an analytic tool, but if you're worried about this number, that number, you get away from what you really need to do, and that's worry about the process. So the other part of it, I think, you see organizations that will be so hell-bent on winning, Kevin, win, that, yeah, absolutely, I can win, but do my guys know how to go through the process to do this correctly? And I see that when I see kids get to the big leagues now. Maybe I'm just feeling like I'm older, but I see kids that come up and they're fundamentally flawed, and I'm thinking, well, how did this kid get promoted? Well, he won all the way through, and he put up big sabermetric numbers, but nobody ever paid attention to the process, that he has a two-strike approach, that he keeps his hands inside the ball, that he takes a good secondary lead. All those things are in the process, that if the process is pure, you might not win today, but eventually you will.
Yeah, exactly right. You have to think ahead. If you're Will Myers, a tying run at second base in the eighth inning, and Renfro hits a bullet right at you, you've got to get out of the way of that. You have time to get out of the way of that. And he didn't. He tried to run and get the jump on the ball, and the ball hit him. It would have been a clean, like a single, probably maybe even a double. The ball was just hit so hard. And, yeah, it's hit hard, but remember, he's at shortstop as a runner. And those are the types of things that cost you ball games. Consequently, the home run that Hedges hit only tied the game, and then the Dodgers win it in extra innings. I'll give you another example of process. Last night I'm watching the Giants and the D-backs. Stratton really struggles early, like a lot of pitchers do, right?
Get to him early, because if he gets locked in, you're in trouble.
Well, he's got a good sinker, there's no question. He changes speeds really well. He had pretty good command last night, but not in the first inning. So Peralta's up there with a 3-0 count. I think the first two guys got on, 3-0 count. And he swings at a 3-0 pitch, and he ends up making an out. And I'm thinking, when the guy hasn't thrown a strike yet, why are you swinging? Why are you swinging? He ends up making an out, and they get out of that inning. And then let's go to the ninth inning. Okay, they're down 2-0. Peralta leads off. He's having a great year. Fine. But Stratton's been on his game. Okay, now it's the bullpen, and Watson's there. Watson's had some trouble lately throwing strikes. So he
goes him throw strikes.
He goes 3-0 and then 3-1 on Peralta, and I'm thinking to myself, I would make him. I don't care if he's got 25 home runs or not. That run means nothing. He needs to get Goldschmidt up there being the tying run.
I need base runners right now.
Thank you. What does he do? He throws it a 3-1 pitch that was in off the plate, gets tied up and rolls over. That's the first out. That was ball four. So Lovello doesn't put the take sign on, make him take two. And those are things, and I'm not saying I'm a genius. I'm just saying I watch these games and I say, here's one thing that could have really put more pressure on the Giants. And what does Goldschmidt do? He walks. He takes ball four. Well, it would have been runners at first and second, nobody out.
That's a completely different ball game.
the next guy, they get another guy on, it would have been bases loaded, and they might have won that game. Strickland comes in, and he walks a guy. And then finally Ahmed, who had guys on, if he hits a home run, double, he ties it. A home run, he wins it probably. He ends up flying out to right field. Souza was the other one that walked. So Watson was just terribly wild. You know, he's been used an awful lot. He was tired. He's a super pitcher. But even the announcers were saying, and I was listening to the D-back broadcast and watching it on TV, and they said he's been really wild. You can get some base on balls off of him right now. And sure enough, 3-1, 3-0 on Peralta. He throws a strike. Just barely got a strike. Then 3-1, he's swinging. Why are you letting him swing there? See, those are the types of things why teams end up losing. And here's what I see right now. And I'm not saying this because I work for the Dodgers. It's not about that. This is totally unbiased. As I'll say it about other teams that we're going to talk about in this podcast as well that I watch that are battling. Seattle and some of the other teams and why Oakland's winning and Houston, why they're better now, et cetera. But watching the West like I do, here's why Arizona has a real chance to slip out of this thing with at-bats like that. And if that's the process you're thinking about, you're not thinking about, you know what, I got to get on base. I got to take another pitch right here. Even if I get a line drive base hit, it's fine. But I'm going to make him throw two more strikes. I'm going to make him throw three strikes in a row.
Okay,
but he doesn't, and he ends up getting himself out.
All right, I have to ask a question here then.
Because with the 30 home run guy on deck, Paul Goldschmidt, by the way.
We hear this all the time. Oh, you know, players get paid to drive in runs, hit home runs. That's where they get their big bucks. Agents are telling him to swing for the downs is whenever they get an opportunity to. Do you think that it's the rewards of the home runs at the end of the season that keep guys from playing smart baseball?
I do. Yeah, I do. I see that today. There's no doubt about it. Absolutely. I see Dodger guys do it, too. I've seen Kike Hernandez with runner at second base, nobody out.
Move him over.
I see him trying to hit a two-run home run off a lefty. I don't even see an attempt to go to right field. Lately, that's been better, though. So I think that has been addressed by Dave Roberts and his hitting coaches because they've been better the last month, and that's why they're playing better baseball. Yeah, Manny Machado's a big part of it, no question, but their process has been better. Their thought process has been more team oriented rather than individual oriented.
As a manager, how do you talk to that player, address that player? Do you have one of the coaches go over like, hey, listen, come on, you know what you're supposed to do there?
No, I think it has to come from the manager. I mean that's what I like I said earlier in the podcast. I said back in my day in Texas when we were really struggling, we had a really good offensive lineup. What really ticked me off in that road trip I talked about. We were in Baltimore, and Arthur Rhodes had a start. It's when he was starting, the lefty.
Mm-hmm.
Through 96. We loaded the bases in the first inning with nobody out, and he proceeded to strike out the next three guys.
Mm.
And I could tell all three guys were trying to hit grand slams. And it really, and we ended up losing that game, and it really upset me because that was a game we could have opened up, and then that's a game we would have won. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But we let the pitcher get off the hook, then he got a little confidence going, and all of a sudden, he was doing what Stratton was doing last night to the D-backs. All of a sudden, he got a breather. So, I escaped the hook there and ends up going eight innings, for crying out loud, of shutout ball. The at-bats were all the same. Everybody was trying to hit, you know, big swings. And they were chasing a lot of pitches, and consequently, they started pressing. What I saw was a team that was pressing offensively and has been pressing. And I think, you know, instead of them being three games up on the Dodgers, they lost a half a game, and they're only two up on the Dodgers. And they both have two to play before they play each other four times. So that's why I lead up to this series on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be really that could be the season for the D-backs. Could be for the Dodgers, too. But the Dodgers are on a roll right now. I mean, their lineup is deeper than any team in the National League West. There's no doubt.
Okay, I do want to address this. I said I was going to bring it up. Kenley Jansen giving up home runs since he's been back. Mm-hmm. Another example.
0-2. Paul DeJong with a fly ball well hit to left center field. Taylor going back at the wall. He looks up, and it's gone, a home run. Paul DeJong, a two-run home run. And the Cardinals lead it 3-1. Jansen, who gave up two home runs on Monday night.
Highlight courtesy of the Dodgers Radio Network. Skip, what's going on with Kenley?
Well, it's interesting you ask that because yesterday I was on our local channel here with the Dodger channel, and I was asked the same question, and I'm going to give the same answer, and here it is. I did some games in San Diego when Rick Monday took some time off during the All-Star break. I joined the team right after the break and did the last two games of that series, and I saw Kenley Jansen come in and do something I hadn't seen before. He was trying to throw a lot of high fastballs, like everybody's throwing these high fastballs to get chases today.
Mm-hmm.
But he was doing it. He has a two-seam fastball that he throws 97, 98. That's his two-seamer. He doesn't throw a four-seamer. Corey, he throws that two-seamer once in a while, usually to lefties when he wants to get him off the cutter in. He'll throw it. Remember Mariano Rivera used to do that?
Right, just to keep him honest.
Just to keep him honest. And then he'll throw his slider, which is a good one. And nobody looks for that, and they end up chasing it usually. He's got a good one. Bottom falls out of it. But he started throwing recently this last, well, since that point in time, about the latter part of the season here, post-All-Star break, he's been throwing a lot of high fastballs with two strikes, trying to get the swing and the miss. And I'm thinking to myself, why? In fact, I remember talking during the broadcast against the Padres. Villanueva was up. It was a ninth inning, and a runner was on first base with two outs. And he was throwing a lot of these high fastballs. And finally, Rick Honeycutt went out to the mound, and I said to Charlie Steiner I was working with, I said, I'll bet that Rick is saying, just go to your cutter. Stay with your cutter. That's your money pitch. Stay with that. Anyway, he ends up throwing a 29-pitch save and gets Villanueva to pop out to right field by throwing the cutter. But before that, he was throwing a lot of high fastballs, and guys were just missing him. I mean, they were very dangerous pitches, and they were home run pitches. So a flat cutter is a home run pitch. So let's just take the St. Louis series recently where the Cardinals swept the Dodgers, right?
Right, and he gave up some bombs.
Jed Jerko comes in. They're down one run. He pinch hits. He's in a double switch situation, so he's leading off the top of the ninth. They're down, or was it tied at the time? I think it was tied at the time. Yeah, it was tied at the time, and Kenley had come in. He was already up, and they tied it. O'Neill hit a home run to tie it up with Scott Alexander in the eighth inning. So now we're in the ninth inning, tie game, and Kenley's job is to put a zero up there and let the Dodger offense try to win it in the bottom of the ninth. Well, what he does, he throws a high cutter to Jerko by intent. Not the normal cutter down in a way to get him to hit it off the end of the bat, maybe roll it over to shortstop. Throws him a high cutter. It didn't cut much. And what it did, when it did break, it goes right over the heart of the plate. It comes in a little bit off the inside corner, and then it goes over the heart of the plate. And then Jerko is a high ball hitter, loves that pitch anyway. It's a home run to left field. Did the same thing to Carpenter. They threw one to Carpenter and ends up rolling it right down the middle, cut right into his swing. It was, in fact, it was middle, as everybody was saying, and it was. It was exactly middle of the zone. Home run to left center field, loses it 3-1. Next time he came out, basically same thing. And a lot of them, if you're watching Kenley watch lately, it's been the high fastball. You'll see Grandal set up high, trying to get the high cutter for a swing and a miss. Well, you never saw Mario Rivera throw a high cutter. You saw him throw a cutter in on the hands of lefties or away to righties to get him off the end of the bat. You never saw him try to go up and out over the plate just to get a swing and a miss. That's not what the cutter was designed for. Consequently, I've said this for every year that I've done broadcasting and seen the cutter. I said the cutter is a very flat pitch. Yeah, if it's got late movement and it's in on the hands of a lefty, it's a dynamite pitch. Mario Rivera will be in the Hall of Fame for it. But if it's not, and it's not moving a lot, it becomes a flat cutter, becomes a home run pitch or a fly ball pitch. And that's what's been happening lately. So I'm anxious to see. And tonight's ball game against Texas, if Kenley starts throwing more cutters like he normally does, just down and away to righties His natural cutter, yes. But everybody wants to go north and south today, and not everybody is used to going up in the zone. Kenley's never been a guy that throws a lot of pitches up in the zone.
Never.
Above the hands. But I've noticed it with Grandal catch, because Grandal will call that with most pitchers.
And then he'll kind of stand up a little bit.
He'll stand up a little bit, and the hitters can feel that when you do that, too. So you got to be careful, that's all.
Let's talk a little bit about the Boston Red Sox.
Pitch is swung on, grounded toward the middle, but the second baseman on the left side has it, throws low, scooped by Bowers. Ball game is over, and the Red Sox are swept by the Tampa Bay Rays. They're swept in a series for the first time this year as they fall in the finale 9-1. Rays have won 8 straight. Red Sox have dropped 3 in a row in 6 of 8. And as of right now, their lead has been cut to 6.5 games over the Yankees in the AL East. The Red Sox outscored 24-5
Highlight courtesy of the Boston Red Sox Radio Network. Skip, they lose three games in a row to the Tampa Bay Rays. They're 4-6 over the last 10 days after that sweep, and people in Boston who thought the whole thing was over and done with after sweeping the Yankees a couple weeks ago are now hitting the panic button. What about you?
Yeah, well, the division is really up for grabs. I mean, like I said, there's 31 games left, and they're, what, about six games out? Five and a half games out or so?
Yep.
5 to 6 games out. So that's doable. You can make that up because there's enough time left. Now, if you were still 10 games out with 30 to play, I think it'd be really difficult to do. But when you're 5 or 6 games out with 31 to play or so, that's doable. And I can remember when we were in first place in Boston back in my day in 95, and we had an 8-game lead, and all of a sudden it got down to 5 games in the month of September. I remember my guys gripping. We ended up, all of a sudden we lost 5 in a row. We had never lost more than 3 in a row all year. And then all of a sudden in September we lost 5 in a row. And I knew it was because my guys were gripping. They weren't the same guys. They weren't having the same at-bats. The plot process was different, like we were talking about earlier with you. And my guys were pressing. There was no doubt about it. And finally I had to make a change. I put a Dwayne Hosey. I remember leading him off, and people can look him up. They don't know him. He ended up going to Japan and hitting like 30 home runs a year there. But he ends up hitting a leadoff home run. What I'm saying is we picked him up on a Rule 5 draft from Atlanta, so I decided to lead him off and play center just to mix it up because he was really hungry. You know, he was a good hitter, fast, could really fly, had some power. Not a big guy, but had power. He was kind of like a size of Andrew McCutchen type player, but a switch hitter. And he hits a home run to lead off the game, and I could just feel the bench and see the guys on the bench. Everybody exhaled. Clemens was pitching that night. And we ended up winning that game, and that really kind of stopped our losing streak of 5 games and created a winning streak. And then after that, we never looked back. But in September, we did grip for a while there, and that's what Boston's going through right now because they're seeing the scoreboard, and they know it's not over yet.
Yankees went 8-2 in the last 10 days, and they're playing well.
Hey, and they, listen, and you start looking at strength of schedule, too, and you go, you know what? They're playing really well right now. They're going to have the rookie of the year in Andujar, and Gleyber Torres hit a home run last night, and their pitching is going well. Their bullpen's fantastic. You know, they could go – I'm not saying they could do what Colorado did years ago when they went to the World Series back in 04 when they went to the World Series.
Yeah, 04.
I think it was. They won 21 out of their final 22 games, but – you're always cognizant that they could go on an 18-2 run or a 17-3
run. And it's the Red Sox and the Yankees. So you know what that means. Anything can happen.
Yeah, and if the Red Sox play 500 ball, look what happened to Terry Francona. I think it was his final year. Remember the beer and chicken incident?
There September 28th. Evan Longoria hit that big home run.
Yeah, and Tampa Bay ends up, you know, knocking them out. And the Red Sox are supposed to win the division going away. They had a terrible September, and they got knocked out. So that's what you look back at, and that's what the fans in Boston always look back at. Now, they've won 3 championships since the 86-year dry run. Back in my day, they hadn't won yet in 86 years.
You know, if you're a longtime Red Sox fan, you have that.
You know that's
in the back of your mind.
You're always thinking about Bucky Dent. That's always passed on from generation to generation. You're always thinking about those terrible second halves the Red Sox have had, so you're hoping – this great team doesn't fold. Now, they're not going to – if the Yankees win the division, the Red Sox are not going to lose so much that they'll be knocked out of a wild card spot. But like we said all year on this podcast, is that that's there's too many good teams that are going to be in the playoffs in the American League, and you don't want to play one of those wild card teams just in one game to try to, you know, to earn it. Exactly.
What advice would you give Joey Cora?
Alex Cora?
Alex Cora, yeah.
Be himself. Don't change. Don't panic. Don't start doing something you haven't done. If you haven't been a yeller and a screamer, don't all of a sudden start yelling and screaming in the clubhouse. You just got to play under control. If you do believe in meetings, be under control in your meeting and just explain the process to the guys and just say, hey, you know, this is about playing our game and about relaxing and not about pressing. It's not about looking at the scoreboard. You guys take care of yourself. I'll worry about the scoreboard. Those types of things. You know, you take the pressure off the guys. That's what I tried to do when I was in Boston. We had the lead, and sometimes when you're being chased, like the Yankees are chasing the Red Sox now, you tend to look at that scoreboard because everybody's telling you, oh, you've got this Division I. I can't wait to see you guys.
I got my playoff tickets ordered, guys.
Just go all the way through it. You guys are going to be in the World Series. It actually becomes a lot of pressure on guys because now the expectations – are there. They've had the best team perhaps on record as far as their overall record in Red Sox history. And everybody's talking about that. Everybody in Boston's talking about that. Boston's a very small town. I mean, every time you're walking around going to dinner, I can remember people on the street, they know who Alex Cora is, believe me. They know. I mean, in L.A., it's a little bit different. It's a Hollywood town. They're not so worried if they see Yasiel Puig or Dave Roberts and all that. They don't bother these guys like they do in Boston. It's Red Sox Nation. If they see a Red Sox out and about walking to dinner or something, they're all over them. I mean, they're following them. I mean, that's how it is there. So you are it in Boston. So Alex knows that because he played there, and that's obviously helped him. So he gets it. He understands it. I think that's the advantage of having been there before for him. But he's never managed before in the big leagues, and he's never managed in September in a pennant race. So you just got to make sure that you're still yourself and you're not panicking in your own right. Don't let the players see that, even if you feel it. Joe Torre told me once, I said, man, you're so calm in these playoff games and in these World Series and these pennant races. How do you do it? He goes, Kevin, what people don't see, they see me on the bench. They see me walking out to the mound all calm and cool. What they don't see or feel are all the butterflies I feel going up and down my stomach every night. I said, okay. And he goes, I have Don Zimmer to lean on, too. That helped me an awful lot. That's what he said, too.
I was just thinking of Zim at that point. You know, it's interesting when I hear you talk about conversation with Joe Torre, conversations with Bruce Bochy, or the managers that you've talked to or that we've talked to over the years. Is there like a mutual admiration society? Is there a fraternity that only you and someone who's sat in the manager's office can commiserate with?
I really believe that, yes. I mean, it's something that Sandy Koufax told me once. He said, nobody can tell me what it's like to pitch Game 7 in the World Series. No pitching coach, nobody, unless they've done it before.
Mm.
And I never forgot that. In fact, I told Curt Schilling that, you know, years ago when they went to the World Series and they won it. And he said he was going to pull a Joe Namath. And if they had won Game 6, and he said, we're going to win Game 7. And they did. Back in 01 against the Yankees, they came back and won the final two in Arizona. And it's what it reminded me of. I said, man, that's really an interesting statement, because Koufax is not an arrogant guy. But for him to say that to me one time privately, we were talking about, you know, pitching in the playoffs, pitching in the World Series. And he wasn't one to say, if you haven't done it before anywhere at any level, you don't know what it feels like. But he was talking about Game 7 of the World Series. He said, if you haven't started a Game 7 of the World Series, you can't tell me what I feel like or what it's going to feel like. You have to experience it. And I thought that was a really good point. And so for me, if you haven't managed in Boston in the playoffs or managed a pennant-winning team, or if you haven't managed at the big league level and gone through what we're all talking about today, Rich, then it's really hard for somebody else that hasn't been there before. And it's no disrespect to somebody that hasn't been there before. It's just that it is a fraternity. And there's very few of us that have done this. I mean, there's only 30 of these jobs every year.
I was thinking about this the other day because, so I didn't get to manage in the big leagues. I didn't coach in the NFL. I didn't coach in college football. But I am a fly on the wall because I've experienced so many of these things just being there observing and keeping my mouth shut.
Right.
I've observed you. I've observed Joe Maddon. I've observed Dusty Baker, Lou Piniella. I do college football working as a sideline reporter. I've stood there and got the life lessons that coaches will pass along. Be early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. And if you're late, I left without you. Or get your head out of your you-know-what.
Right.
Get your head where your you-know-what is one of the coachisms that I get. So I've been lucky enough and fortunate enough, and I hope folks in this podcast get it, that you get to be that fly on the wall, having those experiences that we don't get to know what it's like to be Kevin Kennedy, and I can't grow a mustache as well as you, but I get about as close as I can by absorbing through osmosis all these moments that I hope will help folks enjoy the game even more.
Well, Rich, that's why I felt it was really important to manage in the minor leagues, and I really respect guys that have managed in the minor leagues, like guys like Snitker and the guys that are managing, guys like Bannister of Texas that managed so long.
In St. Louis.
St. Louis, the same thing. The guy's been around forever. He's done so many different things in the game. And look how they're responding. Why? Because he doesn't panic.
Joe Maddon.
The guy doesn't bat an eye. I mean, he doesn't bat an eye in St. Louis. I saw it. And even when it looks like they're not going to come back and win, He's convicted in his ways that, hey, this is the right move, what I'm going to do here. He manages with authority, but he doesn't have this iron fist, like, you got to do it. He doesn't slam the, you know, clipboard down and things like that, like some managers did over time. And I said, man, this is really interesting. But I think managing a lot of games at a lot of different levels helps when you're in the big leagues for the first time doing it. Because I don't know, I haven't watched Gabe Kapler lately, but I know they haven't been having a lot of success lately. I don't know if he's changing and if there's anything behind the scenes where there's a little bit of change in his personality. Or not, I won't say panic, because I don't think Gabe's that type of guy, but you never know what a guy's doing differently behind the scenes, because we're not in the dugout or in the clubhouse unless you're covering the team.
Have you ever seen that movie U-571?
No,
it's a movie about a submarine commander in World War II. They were going out to capture the Enigma machine, which was the Nazi code machine, and they were going out trying to find one. And in the movie, the captain of the submarine dies, and the second in command takes over. And
oh, wow.
It's a big point in the movie. And they look at him and they go, what do we do? And he goes, I have no idea.
Oh my goodness.
And then how these movies work. There's always that older non-commissioned officer, sergeant, or the guy that, you know, is the captain of the boat that's not in command, but he's that backbone for the captain. And he pulls him aside, grabs him, and goes, I don't care what's going on. I don't care whether you know, whether you don't know, but you never say it in front of those kids, because those kids are putting their lives in your hands. And if you don't know, how in the world are they supposed to know? So I don't care what you're feeling in your gut right now. Shut your damn mouth and do your job.
That's so true. That's exactly right. That's why I felt it was so important to get a lot of games in the minors. You know, I managed, I don't know, 1,500 altogether, something like that. It could be between baseball over here and then baseball and winter ball for 4 years. And I even counted instruction league, and all these games counted for managing, because you're managing situations. That's why I'm really big on situational baseball. That was my main point.
Which goes back to the beginning of our podcast.
Yeah. In the beginning, that's really what baseball is, because the score and the inning and the count dictate everything, how you run a game.
You run it differently in the first inning than you do the ninth.
There's no formula. Yeah, I used to feel like early in the season, the first three innings were yours, meaning the teams, the players, let them have their at-bats. The middle innings, the middle three were ours, and the final three were mine. I used to say the final nine outs, guys, are mine, so check your egos at the door, because if you're blowing
it
in the seventh inning, that inning is not yours. If you're not doing the job and that's your normal role, believe me, there's going to be somebody else behind you.
Wow.
And so I kind of use that theory. It was something I haven't heard that anybody else say that, but that was my theory.
I'm going to steal that.
Yeah, the first three innings were yours. All right, let the guys – there's no panic there. Let the guys have their at-bats, see how they're going, see how they're adapting. And that's kind of what Lovello, I think, did yesterday with Peralta. He didn't say anything when Peralta swung at the pitch. But I'm thinking, you know, you're down to the final month. Every at-bat is so important. Scoring first is so important in the final month of the season. And I'm thinking the Giants want to knock everybody off, because they still think – I heard Bochy say, we still think we have a chance. And
yeah,
they do. They're only seven games out. Why can't they? I mean, yeah, they don't have a lot of people there, and they're not having great years. But, hey, they've got some good talent. Some young guys have coming up and doing the job, and why can't they? They still have 30 games to play, and they're going to try to run the table.
With a lot of games against the West.
Yeah, a lot of games against the West, so why not? And they're not going to be an easy team to beat. They've got Bumgarner going tonight. And what if Bumgarner has a Bumgarner game and he gets two runs? They might win 2-0 again. So point is, you've got to take your opportunities when they come. And the D-backs did not take advantage of that, because one of their guys swung at a 3-0 pitch. And, yeah, he's a big guy, but he chased a ball and ends up making an out. And consequently, they weren't playing really good situational baseball, in my mind, both in the first inning and the ninth inning. And I think part of it cost him scoring, at least in that game. So that's why I was really big on that the thought process really has to be there, guys. You got to check your egos at the door in September, the final 30 games. You can't, it's not about, hey, I've got 19 home runs, I got to hit that 20th. But it's hard to say that today, because guys get paid to hit 20 home runs, you know? And guys know that, hey, I'm going to arbitration this year. If I hit 20 home runs, I'm going to make several million more, you know, just put my numbers up against anybody that has 20 home runs or 25 home runs. So I know that's harder today maybe than even in my day. in some regards. But still, you got to remember, even in my day, it was about numbers because those guys were getting paid. Juan Gonzalez, you know, hits 46 home runs. He becomes the highest paid player in the game. So it still was about numbers then. And they knew that. But now you're seeing utility guys that are going to make some money if they hit 20 home runs. So I see guys taking swings to hit their 20th home run, not to get a guy over to third base.
Yep,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, we always name these episodes here on America's Best Baseball Podcast, and we always put something next to an episode, 15, 16, 17. This one I think I'm going to call Skipper Gives Us a PhD-level course in baseball.
Well, thank you, Rich. I appreciate it. I love talking about it because it's not – I don't get a chance to on other shows that I do because it's what's pertinent is the game. The game is more important than what my philosophy is personally because the players dictate, you know, when you're actually broadcasting a game.
Yeah.
You know, it's about what's going on in that game. But sometimes with Rick Monday, we get to share philosophies about certain things.
Oh, I like listening to you and Rick.
But not in depth like this, you know, where I can really break it down and you ask me those questions because it's not something I think about unless you ask me the question. And it's very interesting when you do ask me that because I can always, you know, jog my memory and go, all right, I remember why we changed the process because in June of 25th of 1993, we were 10 games under. I remember we were 20 games over after having an off-day workout that we weren't supposed to have, you know, that type of thing.
I love it. I've never heard that story of the 10-plus years we've been around each other this in the 20 years since I've first laid eyes on you. Never heard that, so I like it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I don't tell that very much because it doesn't become pertinent to any conversation unless we're talking about something like this, you know. When I see guys not having the right approach and not in the right frame of mind, that really bothers me around Major League Baseball because I can tell the difference between a guy that's trying to make an attempt to get a guy over or get a guy in versus I'm trying to get a base hit and get a guy in. There's a difference.
And, folks, you know, Kevin and I are watching the same game, I'll start texting him, wait a minute, Skip, I didn't like the way that looked. And it goes on to like a 20-minute text back and forth because we're talking about the fundamentals of what they did wrong and they did right. So, you know, we talk about this stuff in real life as well.
Well, I mean, I saw it with Colorado last night. They had chances against the Angels earlier to open the game up, but I saw bases loaded, nobody out. And they ended up not scoring, not opening the game up. Wolters hit a home run. I think they got one run out of it, a fly ball. But the at-bats were more about, I'm going to hit a double and clear the bases, rather than, you know what, I'm gonna get a man over, get him in.
We're going to win.
We're going to score two runs here and end up having a three-run inning rather than a two-run inning. That becomes a big point in the game. I mean, they were fortunate. LeMahieu hit a hanging curveball from Jim Johnson for a grand slam, but then they can't go back and their pitching can't hold it. And I look at the faces of pitchers when they come in the eighth inning with a two-run lead, and I know Ottavino's had a phenomenal year, but he looked like he was just, there was afraid to throw a strike.
Yeah, there's a bunch of other places I'd rather be because this ain't one of them.
Yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, when you say that, guys will get mad and say, I wasn't afraid, but then when they really talk to
you
them later
look
on and
in
say,
their,
you know what?
You could see their body language.
I didn't want to throw Trout a strike. Consequently, I walked him, and now the tying run comes up. And now Ohtani, who's already, you know, hit a home run, he's hit five home runs this past nine games or so. Uh-oh, if I make a mistake here, he hits a home run. Well,
confidence. The game is about confidence, folks.
He ends up getting on base or walking or whatever. Yeah. So now you really put yourself in a hole. Then you've got your reliever, that has to come in with the bases loaded and two outs because finally – he couldn't get Coward out, for crying out loud. He was hitting a .150 with two on and two out and a one-run lead. He ends up walking him. So he forces Bud Black to have to make a move. He didn't want to, and can't throw a strike. And he ends up walking in a run.
Now you're really in trouble.
And now you're tied, and now you got to face Eric Young, and he goes 3-2 on him. Did, and Eric Young has not been swinging well, and he hits a little blooper to center. And boom, the Angels come back and score five and win the game. Those are wins you look back on and say, we lost a playoff spot because of that game. That's a game we have to win. And it is. It's a game you have to win. That's why I thought maybe Buddy goes to Wade Davis rather than, get Wade Davis up there because you win or lose a game in the eighth inning. The ninth inning might be your easiest inning.
We've always said that. They might get all the money, but that's not necessarily the toughest inning to get through.
That's why Dave Roberts last year used Kenley Jansen a lot in the eighth inning to get that win because he knew that inning, with key hitters were up there with men on base, he was the right guy to face those guys. Now, this year it's been a different story for a lot of different reasons we won't get into, maybe next podcast. But, He hasn't used him in the eighth inning as much for the AFib and a lot of other reasons, too. Doesn't want to wear him out. Velocity's been down a little bit, et cetera. But point being, I thought last night, because Davis had thrown better, that why not for a four-out save? You got to have this game. I mean, LeMay, who just hit a grand slam to put you up. You were down a couple of runs, looked like it was going to be over. And boom, the Angels walk the bases loaded in the bottom of the eighth. Finally, Johnson comes in. You get a grand slam. Now you're up 7-5. You know the D-backs had already lost or were losing.
Right.
If you win this game, you're in first place. You're in first place. And instead of bringing in Davis, it's O, who came over from Toronto, and O ends up giving it up. So those are games I look at and I go, man.
That's the difference between playing in the wild card and waiting to see who you're going to play and having home field advantage in the divisional series.
And it's a difference between managing with urgency and then managing the way you normally would, too.
Well, I like that the first third are for you guys, middle third are for us, last third are mine, because that reminds me of what you always taught me about what Bruce Bochy said. The difference between managing the World Series of the San Diego Padres and managing with the Giants was a sense of urgency that he had because he had been there before. I'll remember that to the day I die.
Absolutely right. And you have to do that in September when you're, battling for first place and three teams are within two games of each other. If you got an 8-game lead and you don't want to burn out Wade Davis, that's a little bit different with 30 to play. But rather than having 30 to play and you've got no lead, you're one game out of first place and you want to get there. Because if they won that game last night and then they go to San Diego afterwards, perhaps they never look back.
Right.
And they don't have to look at the scoreboard anymore, perhaps. I mean, that was a huge, huge game last night, I thought, for them. And I thought for the Dodgers sitting in Texas watching these two games and knowing that both teams lost.
Oof.
They picked up 2.5 games in 3 days.
Yeah.
They were 4.5 out Friday.
I was all ready for the podcast to go, what in the world's going on? But they're right back there. It's going to be a fun race. All right, yep. Skip, that's going to do it for the podcast for this week. Don't forget, you can find Kevin Kennedy MLB on Twitter. I am RBI Rich. Hey, keep tweeting to us. I like when you guys tweet to us. That way we can answer some of these questions on the air as well. So don't forget, Kevin Kennedy MLB, RBI Rich. And again, I'm just reminding you, it's a free podcast. Tell your friends about it so we can spread the word and we can grow this thing into being America's best baseball podcast.
Thanks for joining us for America's Best Baseball Podcast. Our podcast was produced by Braden Supernant. Find us on Facebook at America's Best Baseball Podcast. You can find Kevin at Kevin Kennedy MLB on Twitter, and you can find Rich on Twitter at RBI Rich.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.